And so, for the second time in my life, I ran. I considered warning my brother, calling him, writing him, but so much time had passed, I had no idea how to reach him, or even if he was still alive. That was the last, and probably the greatest of all my dishonorable acts, the heaviest weight I will carry to my grave.
Why did you run? Were you afraid for your life?
Of course not. If anything, I welcomed it. To die, to finally be put out of my lifelong misery, was almost too good to be true. What I feared was, once again, becoming a burden to those around me. To slow someone down, to take up valuable space, to put other lives in danger if they tried to save an old blind man who wasn't worth saving. And what if those rumors about the dead returning to life were true? What if I were to find myself infected and awake from death to threaten the lives of my fellow countrymen? No, that was not going to be the fate of this disgraced Hibakusha. If I was to meet my death, it should be in the same manner as I had lived my life. Forgotten, isolated, and alone. I left at night and began hitchhiking south down Hokkaido's DOO expressway. All I had with me was a water bottle, a change of clothes, and my ikupasai, a long flat shovel similar to a Shaolin spade, but which also served for many years as my walking stick. There was still a sizable amount of road traffic in those days. Our oil from Indonesia and the Gulf was still flowing, and many truck drivers and private motorists were kind enough to give me a ride. With each and every one, our conversation turned to the crisis. Did you hear that the Self-Defense Force has been mobilized? The government's going to have to declare a state of emergency. Did you hear there was an outbreak last night right here in Sapporo? No one was sure what the next day would bring, how far the calamity would spread, or who would be its next victim. And yet, no matter whom I spoke to or how terrified they sounded, each conversation would inevitably end with, "But I'm sure the authorities will tell us what to do." One truck driver said, "Any day now, you'll see, if you just wait patiently and don't make a public fuss." That was the last human voice I heard, the day before I left civilization and trekked into the Hidaka Mountains. I was very familiar with this national park. Ota-san had taken me here every year to collect sansai, the wild vegetables that attract botanists, hikers, and gourmet chefs from all over the home islands. As a man who rises in the middle of the night knows the exact location of every item in his darkened bedroom, I knew every river and every rock, every tree and patch of moss. I even knew every onsen that bubbled to the surface and therefore never wanted for a naturally hot and cleansing mineral bath. Every day I told myself, "This is the perfect place to die. Soon I will have an accident, a fall of some kind. Or perhaps I will become ill, contract some sickness or eat a poisoned root. Or maybe I will finally do the honorable thing and just stop eating altogether." And yet, every day, I foraged and bathed, dressed warmly and minded my steps. As much as I longed for death, I continued to take whatever measures necessary to prevent it. I had no way of knowing what was happening to the rest of my country. I could hear distant sounds, helicopters, fighter planes, the steady high-altitude whine of civilian jetliners. Perhaps I was wrong, I thought. Perhaps the crisis was over. For all I knew, the authorities had been victorious, and the danger was rapidly fading into memory. Perhaps my alarmist departure had done nothing more than create a welcome job opening back at the Akakaze, and perhaps one morning I would be roused by the barking voices of angry park rangers, or the giggles and whispers of schoolchildren on a nature hike. Something did arouse me from my sleep one morning, but not a collection of giggling students. And no, it wasn't one of them either.